would not necessarily destroy the weapon, only render it temporarily unusable until the control system could be rebuilt.
We'd likely get only one shot at it, Poe put in. What Admiral Akbar said about keeping it secret would only work as long as its location remains unknown. Once the First Order realizes that we know where it is, they throw everything they've got into defending it with ships, mobile stations, and long-range detectors. We might never get close to it again.
Leia nodded agreement.
Then our first attack must succeed.
She looked across at Statura.
What do you recommend, Admiral?
Assuming for the moment that my hurried supposition is reasonably correct, the weapon would be at its most vulnerable when, as it were, it is fully loaded.
Once again, he regarded the others.
If the containment field oscillator were somehow destroyed at that moment, it would release the accumulated energy not in a line of fire, but throughout the planetary core, where it is being held. If it did not result in the complete destruction of the base, at the very least, it would permanently cripple the weapon.
His flare of white hair and beard giving him the look of a prophet, Major Emat spoke up.
Maybe even the entire planet on which it's based.
As the discussion continued, an officer appeared and handed Leia a readout. She studied it intently as the debate swirled around her.
None of this is possible,
a downcast Akbar postulated.
While the planet in question may at present be deliberately under-defended, the instant we move forces out of hiding and in its direction, the First Order will realize that we know the location of the weapon. They will mobilize everything in the vicinity to protect it. Their fleet is too large for us to fight our way through. Additionally, despite what Poe theorizes, I would wager they must already have at least a minimal planetary shield in place. Plainly, they can access the energy to support such a defense.
He looked at Finn, whose reply was not encouraging.
Yes, such a shield does exist.
The situation could not be worse,
C-3PO murmured.
Raising a hand for attention, Leia held up the readout. According to this, we don't have time to study the situation, even if we decided to do so. Our team has detected an enormous quantity of dark energy surging toward the world Finn has identified for us. That can only mean one thing.
She paused for emphasis.
They're loading the weapon again. I think we can all take a good guess as to what their next target will be.
C-3PO lowered his golden head.
I was wrong. It can be worse.
Seeing the downcast expressions of those around him, Poe reached out and indicated the containment control structure.
They may raise their shields, but if we can find a way past them, we can and will hit that oscillator with everything we've got.
Han grinned broadly.
I like this guy.
Akbar remained pessimistic.
Any plan is pointless as long as their shields are in place. A proper planetary defense system, as this one is sure to have, will not allow for a way past them.
Han was not so easily discouraged.
Okay, so first we disable the shields.
He turned to Finn.
Kid, you work there. What you got?
Finn's eyes slowly widened as he thought back.
I can do it. Shut down their shields.
He was nodding vigorously, as much to himself as to the others.
I know where the relevant controls are located.
Realization dampened some of his initial enthusiasm.
But I need to be there, of course. On the planet, with access to the location.
I'll get you there.
Gazing at Han, Leia saw something that had been absent from her life for a long, long time. Solo bravado.
Han, how?
He grinned broadly at her. She had missed that, too, she realized.
If I told you, you wouldn't like it.
An energized Poe took over.
All right, So we disable their shields, take out the containment oscillation controls, and destroy their big gun. Even if it can fire halfway across the galaxy, and it's too big for us to destroy, we can make sure it blows itself to pieces. Sounds like a plan. Let's move.
Chapter 15. In the vast, darkened assembly chamber of Starkiller Base were only two figures. One tall and uncertain, the other looming and imperious. For all their isolation, they seemed to somehow fill the room. There was as much curiosity in Supreme Leader Snoke's voice as there was disappointment.
This scavenger, this girl, resisted you.
That's all she is, yes. A scavenger from that inconsequential Jakku. Completely untrained, but strong with the Force. Stronger than she knows.
His mask off, Ren replied with what seemed to be his usual assurance. No one else would have sensed a difference. Snoke did. The Supreme Leader's voice was flat.
You have compassion for her.
No, never. Compassion for an enemy of the Order?
I perceive the problem. It isn't her strength that is making you fail. It's your weakness.
The rebuke hurt, but Ren didn't show it.
Where is the droid?
Smooth and unctuous, the voice of General Hux rang out in the assembly hall before Ren could respond.
Ren believed it was no longer of value to us. Turning, the quietly livid younger man followed the approach of the increasingly confident officer. He believed that the girl was all we need, that he could obtain from her everything necessary. As a result, although we cannot be certain, it is likely that the droid has been returned to the hands of the enemy.
Though visibly angry, Snoke's tone remained unchanged.
Have we located the main resistance base?
Hux was clearly gratified to be the bearer of good news.
We were able to track their reconnaissance ship back to the Illenium system. We are coordinating with our own reconnaissance craft in the area in order to lock down the specific location of their base.
Snoke replied with cold satisfaction.
We do not need it. Prepare the weapon. Destroy their system.
Collected and composed as he was, Hux was not immune to surprise.
The system? Supreme Leader, according to the most recent Gallographics, at least two and possibly three habitable worlds circle Illenium. Following the destruction of the Hosnian worlds, would it not be worthwhile simply to destroy their base and claim the remainder for the Order? We will have the location of the base within a matter of hours, and...
Snoke cut him off.
We cannot wait. Not even for hours. Hours that may permit as little as one ship to depart with the information that will allow them to find Skywalker. That would be one ship too many. The more time we give them, the more likely the chance, however slight, that they will find Skywalker and convince him to return to challenge our power. As soon as the weapon is fully charged, I want the entire Illenium system destroyed.
Daring to disagree, Ren took a step forward.
No! Supreme Leader, I can get the map from the girl, and that will be the end of it. I just need your guidance.
And you promised me, when it came to destroying the resistance, you wouldn't fail me.
The threatening figure of Snoke leaned toward Ren.
Who knows if copies of the map have already been made and sent out of the system to other minor resistance outposts? But those who are most aware of its significance will all likely be gathered at their main base. Destroy that! Destroy them! And we may at least feel a little more confident that the way to Skywalker is eradicated. Even if copies have been made and exported, the annihilation of their leadership will give pause to any survivors who might dare to contemplate further resistance to us.
He sat back.
For that reason alone, I would order the destruction of the system. Even if there was no assurance, it would also put an end to this accursed map.
He turned to Hux.
General, prepare the weapon. With the same efficiency you have already demonstrated.
Yes, Supreme Leader. Buoyed by the praise, Hux turned and strode quickly out of the hall. That left Snoke to fix his eyes on its sole remaining occupant.
Kylo Ren. It appears that a reminder is in order. So I will show you the dark side. Bring the girl to me.
Slightly apart from the rush of activity that filled the resistance base, an unlikely pair was going through the stages of performing a final checkout on an old but deceptively fast freighter. Chewbacca and Finn moved quickly to comply with Han's orders.
Chewie, check the horizontal booster.
A growling response provoked an equally terse one from the Millennium Falcon's owner.
I don't care what the onboard readouts say. There's no substitute for a final visual inspection. You know that. Finn, careful with those Dentons. They're explosives.
Halting, Finn gaped at the load he was carrying.
They are?
He faltered.
Why didn't you tell me?
Didn't want to make you nervous,
Han replied.
When you finish loading those, go talk to some of those X-Wing techs and see if you can scare us up a backup thermal regulator.
The voice that joined in was the one that had always been able to bring him to a stop, whatever he happened to be doing. He turned to see Leia approaching.
No matter how much we fought, she said, I always hated watching you leave.
He grinned.
That's why I left. To make you miss me.
For the first time in quite a while, she laughed freely. It was infectious, happy. And these days all too rare.
Well, thank you for that anyway.
He turned reflective.
It wasn't all bad, was it? I know we argued a lot.
He smiled affectionately.
Maybe it's because we both have such shy, retiring personalities. Of course, if you'd only done what I said...
And you'd only done what I asked.
She riposted, still smiling. He chuckled softly.
I mean, some of it was good.
Pretty good.
She agreed, nodding.
Some things never change.
Yep.
She glanced downward, remembering, then met his gaze once more.
You still drive me crazy.
Crazy as in crazy good? Or crazy as in borderline insane?
Probably a little of both,
she admitted. He put his hands on her shoulders, and 30 years fell away in an instant.
Leia, there's something I've been wanting to say to you for a long time.
Fighting to hold back tears, she put a finger to his lips.
Tell me when you get back.
He started to object. Caught himself. There'd been too much arguing over the years, he knew. This time, he really might not come back. The last thing he wanted was to part on even a semblance of a spat. Instead, he took her into his arms, which really was much better than arguing or even talking. They stood like that for a long moment, holding tightly to each other.
"If you see our son,"
Leia whispered,
"bring him home."
He nodded without speaking. If nothing else, in 30 years, he had learned when to be quiet.
What had happened?
Shackled and unable to move, Rey lay on the inclined platform in her restraints, pondering the encounter with Kylo Ren. At first, there had been the same pain and fear she had felt in the forest on Takodana. It had intensified as he had probed deeper, and she had fought to resist. Then, she had resisted. More than that, it was as if her resistance had somehow turned the probing back on him. For a brief instant, she had been in his mind. She could remember clearly his shock, then concern, and finally a retreat. He had pulled away from her and out of her mind with a suddenness that bespoke, not fright, something else. Apprehension, she decided. Whatever she had done had thrown him badly off balance. He had withdrawn, no doubt, not only to consider what had taken place, but also to decide how to proceed with her. That meant, most likely, he would be back. She would do anything to avoid that. And that is what she proceeded to do. If she could push him out of her mind and enter his, what else could she do? What might she be able to do with regard to someone else? Someone less skilled, untrained in the ways of the Force? The single guard posted just inside the front of her cell, for example?
You!
He turned toward her, patently unconcerned and not a little bored. She studied him closely. As he was about to speak, she addressed him clearly and firmly, and not only with her voice.
You will remove these restraints, and you will leave this cell with the door open and retire to your living quarters.
The guard eyed her silently. He did not look in the least intimidated. Her confidence wavering as she shifted slightly in her bonds, she repeated what she had said with as much authority as she could muster.
You will remove these restraints, and you will leave this cell with the door open and retire to your living quarters. You will speak of this encounter to no one.
Raising the heavy black and white rifle he held, he came toward her.
Heart pounding,
she watched him approach. Was she going to be killed, freed, or maybe laughed at? Halting before her, he looked down into her eyes. When he spoke again, there was a notable alteration in his voice. It was significantly less confrontational and distant.
I will remove these restraints and leave this cell with the door open and retire to my living quarters. I will speak of this encounter to no one.
Working methodically, he unlatched her shackles. He stood and stared at her for a moment, then turned and wordlessly started for the doorway. Lying in shock on the reclined platform, Rey hardly knew what to do next. She was free. No, she corrected herself. She was free of this cell. That hardly constituted freedom. But it was a beginning. As the guard reached the doorway, she spoke hastily.
And you will drop your weapon?
I will drop my weapon,
he responded in the same uninflected voice.
This he proceeded to do, setting the rifle down on the floor, then turning left into the outside corridor to depart in silence.
For a long moment she stared at the open portal, deciding that it was not a joke and that the guard was not waiting for her just outside the cell. She moved to pick up the weapon, and leave. Normally, there was something relaxing about traveling in hyperspace, Finn mused. There was no fighting in hyperspace, and very rarely any kind of surprise. Hyperspace travel allowed time for reflection, for casual conversation with comrades, for checking out and preparing one's equipment. Not this time. Not in the course of this jump. Weary of living with only his own thoughts, he left the lounge and moved forward into the cockpit, where he found Han and Chewbacca in their respective seats, monitoring the journey.
"I haven't asked you," he said to the pilot. "How are we getting in?"
Han explained without looking up from his console.
"Any kind of defense will be geared to guard against an attack in force. They shouldn't be prepared for an attempt by a single ship to slip in. That would obviously be suicide."
Finn nodded as he pondered this.
"Okay, now I'm really encouraged. Let's say that your optimistic assessment is wrong, and they're even prepared to detect and destroy a single ship. How do we avoid that?"
"No planetary defense system can be sustained at a constant rate. It would take too much power. Besides, it isn't necessary. All planetary shields have a fractional refresh. Instead of being constantly on, they fluctuate at a predetermined rate. Keeps anything traveling less than light speed from getting through. Theoretically, a ship could get its nose in when a shield is off. Half a second later, the shield snaps back on and, well, it isn't good for anyone on that ship."
"Okay, I get that," Finn told him. "Which brings me back to my first question. How are we getting in, without being cut in half by an oscillating shield?"
"Easy."
The way Han said the word made it sound like the simplest thing in the world.
"We won't be going slower than light speed."
Unsure he'd heard correctly, Finn gaped at him.
"We're gonna make our landing approach at light speed? Nobody's ever done that. At least, I've never heard of anybody ever doing it."
One did not have to be fluent in the Wookiee language to get the gist of Chewbacca's comment. Han smiled pleasantly.
"We're coming up on the system. I'd sit down if I were you. Chewie, get ready."
As the wide-eyed Finn scrambled for a seat and harness and found himself wishing for a number of very large, soft pads, Chewbacca groaned his readiness. Han studied the readouts before him. The Wookiee raised a hand over his own console.
"And?"
Han followed the declining fractions intently.
"Now!"
Human and Wookiee hands flew over the main console, supplementing as best they could the approach and landing information they had pre-programmed into the Falcon's instrumentation. Not unexpectedly, more than one last-second override was required in order to make the ship do something that was against its nature and perform maneuvers for which it had never been designed. Just like that, they were inside the shields. At that point, they were traveling at very much sublight speed, continuing to slow at an incredible rate, and heading above snow-covered ground directly for a forest that was not as tall but was far denser than the one on Dakar. Chewbacca howled loudly enough for Finn to hear him clearly above the wild, blaring alarms.
"I am pulling up!"
Han yelled as he fought with the recalcitrant controls. While the trees were packed more closely together than those that formed a canopy above the Resistance base, they were much smaller in diameter. The Falcon went plowing through them as both pilot and co-pilot struggled to bring the ship up. A moment later, it was clear of the ground and shooting skyward, which was an equally undesirable outcome.
"Any higher, they'll see us!"
Han shouted. Of course, if the vicinity of the First Order base was monitored by ground-scanning satellites, they were likely to be seen anyway. They could only hope that the instruments on board any such reconnaissance craft were aimed out towards space and not down at the landscape. Down again they went, as Han and Chewbacca fought to retain control while trying to level off. They almost succeeded. Back again among the trees, Han fluttered the sublight drive, while Chewie fought to keep the ship functional. They continued to slow. In the end, it was the forest that broke them, as hundreds of trees splintered and flew around them. The descending Falcon still kept going. Fortunately, the whiteness through which it plowed was composed of relatively fresh snow, not ice. It finally eased to a stop, half buried. On the surface, all was cold and quiet once again.
Ren struggled to control himself. A great deal of his education had been devoted to learning how to live and move forward in the absence of emotion. Right now, he needed every bit of that training to stay calm. As bad as had been the girl's expulsion of his probing, worse was the knowledge she had acquired. At the moment, he did not feel powerful. He felt diminished. Becoming aware that an officer was waiting patiently for him to acknowledge his presence, Ren waved the man forward.
"We have not found the girl yet, sir. The alarm has been propagated throughout the base, and all troopers are on alert."
"Yes." Ren's voice was almost indifferent, as if the bulk of his thoughts were elsewhere. He looked at the officer.
"The trooper was on guard?"
"Still being debriefed, sir. He doesn't remember what happened. One minute he was at his post at ease. The next he found himself in his quarters, changing out of uniform. Initial assessment indicates he is telling the truth." The officer hesitated. "If you would wish to try stronger methods, I can..."
"No. No. Keep questioning him. Just questioning. He may remember something."
His tone darkened.
"The girl. She's here somewhere. There's nowhere for her to go. When you find her, bring her..."
His voice drifted away, as did his attention. The officer waited to be questioned further, to be given additional instructions, to be brusquely dismissed. But Kylo Ren simply stared into the distance, seeing something that was not apparent to the officer, and maintained his silence. There was no movement in the forest. A few flakes of snow drifting down made no sound. In the midst of the trees, at the terminus of a very isolated and very linear disaster, rose an unnatural mound piled high with whiteness. From somewhere within came a groan, deep, reverberant, and disgruntled.
"Oh yeah?"
The voice that responded was sharp and decidedly non-Wookiee in origin.
"You try it!"
Beneath the snow, and within the mound that was the Millennium Falcon, sparks erupted in the passageway behind the cockpit. Having succinctly delivered himself of his opinion of the most recent effort at piloting by the ship's captain, Chewbacca rose from his seat and headed back to deal with the problem, leaving Finn alone in the cockpit with a brooding Han.
"That should have gone better."
Han was studying the readouts that were still functioning. He shook his head, leaning forward to examine a particular telltale.
"That wasn't supposed to be so rough. Nearly was worse than that."
Seeing that Han was having a difficult time coming to terms with their arrival, Finn tried to reassure him.
"Hey, you just performed the improbable by doing the impossible. It's not like there was precedent to follow. I mean, I'm not a pilot, but I've been around a lot of pilots, and I've never even heard anybody talking about trying what you just did. You did great." He gestured around them, at the still intact cockpit, at the sky visible through that part of the forward port that wasn't covered by snow, and at himself. "We're down. We're alive. We're all in one piece. I don't understand. What more could you ask for?"
Han's expression didn't change as he rose and moved to help Chewie.
"Was a time it wouldn't have been so rough."
Not knowing how to respond to that,
Finn wisely said nothing. Within the command center on Dakar, conversation was muted. Officers spoke in whispers, if at all, as everyone waited for word. When it came, no one said if, then talk would resume as normal. But for now, no one dared voice what they were thinking, what they feared. Confirmation would come via a series of hastily linked encrypted hyperspace relays. It would be necessarily condensed, as well as reduced to a mathematical formula to minimize any chance of it being intercepted on its way out. As more and more time passed, initial hope began to flag. Then Admiral Statura broke the tension, looking up from his console to smile at Leia.
The Falcon has landed, ma'am.
Moving to his side, she looked at his readouts. What they told wasn't much, but it was enough.
I wish there was more information. I wish we knew...
She stopped herself. Slipping through the First Order's planetary shields and landing safely would be worth nothing if the Falcon were discovered. She knew there could be no further communication until they had accomplished their task.
Tell me they'll get the shields down.
Statura's reply was firm.
They'll get the shields down.
That was only marginally convincing,
she told him. He smiled anew.
That's what we're operating on, ma'am. Margin. And a thin one at that.
She nodded and turned to a controller.
Send off the X-Wings.
Yes, General.
On the heels of contact with the Millennium Falcon, the controller managed to muster some genuine enthusiasm. The operator seated beside her conveyed the formal order.
All fighters, cleared for takeoff. Go blue team, go red team,
the controller added. Having been standing by and waiting for the word, the first dozen resistance fighters to depart were away in an instant. Droids calculated and recalculated approach patterns to the First Order base, reducing options to those deemed most likely to succeed, while the pilots did their best to restrain themselves and conserve their energy for the actual attack. In the lead was an X-Wing marked with distinctive black patterning. Poe was intent on the instrumentation, while BB-8 attended to matters better left to a mechanical. Behind them, the surface of Dakar fell rapidly away.
All teams, this is Black Leader,
Poe said to the cockpit's omni-pickup.
Altitude confirmed. Distance confirmed. Arrival coordinates confirmed.
He activated several controls, and the X-Wing's hyperspace propulsion system prepared to distort space and time.
Hold for jump to light speed on my go.
When he was confident all was in readiness, he gave the signal. Like flames going out, one fighter after another vanished from the present reality in a streak of light. He had to see for himself. As he strode down the corridor where walls of exposed igneous rock alternated with panels and consoles of metal and spun synthetics, Ren's emotions were boiling. His present mental state contradicted all of his training, but he could not help himself. He had reacted poorly to what had happened earlier, and that had been reflected in the Supreme Leader's judgment. To add to the discomfort, that slimy sycophant Hux always seemed to appear at the most awkward possible moment. He gritted his teeth, angry at himself. It was a measure of his current weakness that something like jealousy toward an insignificant simpleton like Hux could even enter his mind. It was nothing but a waste of physical energy and mental concentration. Hux was not worthy of such attention. The girl, on the other hand. Entering the holding cell, he found it, as expected, deserted. In the center, the single coppery-hued, angled bench stood empty, its multiple curving restraints open and mocking beneath the subdued red illumination from the ceiling.
Unable to contain himself any longer, he pulled his lightsaber, thumbed it to life, and launched into a series of wild swings and strikes, methodically reducing the room to rubble. Hearing his howls of outrage, a pair of stormtroopers crossing at the far end of the access hallway changed course to investigate. What they saw within the cell as bits and pieces of red-hot debris came flying out caused them to retreat the way they had come. Fast.
Chapter 16. Thanks to the snow and the heavy forest cover, the patrol droid did not see them, and the deformation warp from a heat distorter Chewbacca carried in a pouch served to mask their thermal signatures. From time to time, Finn had taken the more primitive but also effective precaution of using a branch to wipe out their footprints as they advanced. Where they could, they kept to rocky surfaces, the better to minimize evidence of their passage. Slung across the Wookiee's back was a duffel packed with advanced Dentons, whose explosive potential greatly exceeded their size. Lengthening his stride, Finn moved up alongside Han and pointed.
There's a flood tunnel over that ridge. We can get in that way.
Han looked over at him.
You sure it isn't safety screened? We can cut through ordinary stuff, but...
Finn shook his head.
There's no screen at all. A screen would defeat the tunnel's purpose.
Han frowned at him.
You said you worked here. You never told us your specialty.
Finn looked away as he replied,
Sanitation.
Han gaped at him.
Sanitation? How do you know how to take down the shields?
He indicated Chewie's backpack.
We've got enough stuff to do the job, but we have to know where to set it. We've only got one chance to do this right. If we fail to bring their shields down, we might as well pack up and apply for First Order citizenship.
His voice lowered.
Also, everyone in the Dakar system is gonna die.
I don't know how to take out the shields, Han.
Finn admitted.
I'm here to get Rey.
Han turned a slow, frustrated circle.
Anything else you've overlooked? Anything else you've forgotten to tell us?
Nearby, Chewbacca added his own groaning comment.
People are counting on us. The galaxy is counting on us.
Solo, Finn shot back. We'll figure it out. We got here, didn't we?
Yeah? How?
Finn smiled encouragingly.
We'll use the Force.
Han rolled his eyes.
Again the Force. Always the Force.
His gaze returned to the hopeful Finn.
I haven't got time to explain it to you, kid, but... That's not how the Force works.
He looked up and around.
Where's that patrol droid?
Chewie growled back at him.
Oh, really? You're cold.
Red borders flanked a ventilation grid that ran the length of the floor as Rey ran down the hallway, her former guard's blaster rifle gripped tightly in both hands. Needing to catch her breath, she ducked into an alcove that provided at least a nominal amount of cover from anyone moving up or down the passage. Though free of the holding cell, she had no destination in mind. A short survey of her surroundings provided one. A long walkway was flanked on one side by a stone and steel wall. Possibly an exterior barrier, it offered no hope of an exit. But on the other side of the walkway... At the far end was a doorway leading to an open hangar. While she couldn't see far beyond, lines of parked TIE fighters suggested the possibility of escape. All that stood in her way was the narrow, railing-free walkway that crossed a vast open atrium. And at the far end, a group of stormtroopers engaged in idle conversation. No one was looking in her direction. Edging forward, while keeping close to the wall, she soon found herself at the end of the corridor and near the start of the walkway. A cautious glance over the side and down revealed a seemingly bottomless pit. Its sides were molded panels that were softly lit with hundreds of lights, extending down, down, until even those lights were not sufficient to illuminate the shadowy depths. How to get across without alerting the hangar guards on the far side presented a seemingly insurmountable problem. The walkway itself was flat and completely open, offering no cover to anyone trying to cross. She couldn't go back. This might be her only chance to get off-planet. And no matter what she had managed to do previously, she doubted Kylo Ren would allow her to manipulate him or any lesser minds again. The decision was made for her. The echo of approaching booted feet made her turn to look back the way she had come. A clutch of stormtroopers was coming up the corridor, heading her way. There was no chance they would fail to notice her standing within the shallow alcove. Breaking from cover, she ran to the near end of the walkway. But instead of continuing across, and certainly drawing the attention of the troopers on the other side, she slipped over the edge. And just in time. The fast-moving squad coming up the corridor reached the walkway as she dropped down. Hanging there by her fingers, just out of sight, she reflected that what she was doing was no different from climbing the interior walls of derelict starships back on Jakku. The difference was that there it was a lot warmer, and here the passers-by were inclined to shoot at you. If she let go, or otherwise lost her grip, of course, it would solve all her problems. Permanently. How many troopers were there in the squad? She wondered as they continued to pass above her. How long was it going to take them to get across? Hanging there, waiting, she had time to study her immediate surroundings. What she saw suggested another way out. One that would not involve a possibly suicidal attempt to blast her way past a cluster of hangar guards. Working her way sideways, hand over hand, while methodically locating shallow footholds, she made it across to a service hatch, slotted into the wall of the atrium. It opened silently and without the need to enter a code at her touch. While still yawning to depths unknown beneath her, the inner workings of the base that she was able to reach through the hatch provided access to better handholds. If she was lucky and didn't lose her sense of direction, much less her grip, she felt she might be able to work her way across to the corresponding service area that ran underneath the TIE fighter hangar, avoiding the guards above. Then she would have to find a way to access the hangar deck itself, and without drawing any attention. Assuming she could do so, she could try to steal a fighter. One simple predicament after another, she told herself. First, she had to get across. Once, she encountered a small service droid coming toward her. She held her breath, but it ignored her, intent only upon its programmed tasks. Good thing, she thought with relief as she resumed the crossing, that not all droids had the cerebral capacity of one like BB-8. The stormtrooper who waited for the doorway to open expected to see an empty transport compartment. Instead, he found himself confronting two humans and one Wookiee, none of whom were inclined to engage him in casual conversation. Sensing this, the trooper reacted quickly and reached for his blaster. Reaction still sharp from years of experience, Han fired, sending the trooper to the ground. As Chewbacca dragged the body out of sight, Han and Finn peered warily around the corridor's first corner.
The less time spent here, Han quickly decided, the better luck we're gonna have. In fact, the less time we linger anywhere, the better luck we're gonna have.
Yeah, I know. Checking the corridor outside the transport compartment, Finn gestured to his right. I got an idea about that. He started off, Han and Chewbacca following. With Finn leading the way, they managed to make it a considerable distance into the base.
Spotting a figure coming toward them, Finn's eyes grew wide. The advancing officer's armor was highly reflective, and the black, red-fringed cape that hung down the left side, very, very distinctive.
"Here comes our key," Finn whispered.
Han took note of the oncoming figure, then glanced at Finn.
"You know this one?"
Finn's expression was tight.
"Yeah, we've met."
Reading the other man's tone, Han nodded understandingly.
"An old friend, huh?"
"Something like that."
Finn's expression didn't change.
"As much as I'd wish otherwise, we need her alive."
He started fumbling with his blaster.
"I'm not real familiar with this model. Is there a setting to stun?"
Han grinned.
"We've got something else that's always set to stun."
Far down the corridor, a squad of troopers came into view, and the three intruders tensed. But the troopers did not turn to follow the advancing officer, marching off instead down a separate passage. Preoccupied with other matters, the officer failed to see the hairy mountain that plowed into her until it was too late. His massive arms wrapped around her. Chewbacca dragged his captive into the narrow cross corridor where his companions were waiting. As she struggled in the unbreakable grasp, she found herself turned around to confront a blaster pointed directly at her face. An unsmiling Finn had to restrain the finger that was resting on the weapon's trigger.
"Captain Phasma, remember me?"
He moved his weapon slightly.
"Here's my blaster. You still want to inspect it?"
Phasma held on to her dignity.
"Yes, I remember you, FN-2187.
Finn shook his head curtly.
"Not anymore. My name is Finn. A real name for a real person. And I'm in charge now."
From behind the former trooper, Han spoke up.
"We're just visiting. Finn's been giving us a quick tour, and it's been real fun. But we haven't seen the planetary shield control room yet."
He broke out into a broad, pleasant smile.
"We'd really like to see the planetary shield control room."
"Now,"
Finn added menacingly. Phasma sniffed derisively.
"Why should I show you anything?"
Behind her, Chewbacca let out a threatening moan and tightened his grip. She let out a little gasp.
"Because if you don't," Han told her, "we'll eventually find it anyway. But you won't know that, because you'll be dead."
He nodded toward his co-pilot.
"Chewie here doesn't like people who threaten his friends."
She managed a slight shake of her head.
"Even a Wookiee can't crush First Order armor."
In response, Chewbacca tightened his grip further. Her mask emitted a slight but perceptible wheeze.
"Well,"
Han said nonchalantly,
"there's one way to find out."
"Or,"
Finn added, pushing the muzzle of the blaster in a little tighter,
"I can simply shoot you. I'm well trained, you know. I know exactly where to put a kill shot, especially at this range."
"What are you up to here? Are you with the Resistance? Independence?"
"Maybe we'll answer your questions," Finn told her. "Later."
Taking a step back, he gestured with the blaster as Chewie disarmed her.
"Right now, you're our tour guide. Let's go."
They managed to avoid the few technicians and troopers they encountered by ducking back into concealing alcoves or small passageways. There was one guard stationed outside the room they had to enter. Stepping out into the open, Finn waved and smiled as he walked toward the man.
"Hey, hi. When are you off duty, mate?"
"Not for another..."
The trooper outside the door peered at the newcomer.
"Why are you out of uniform? In fact, why are you even in this sector?"
He started to bring up his rifle.
"Put your hands out where..."
A single blow from the Wookiee's massive right hand put the trooper down on the floor, out cold. Han gestured with his blaster as he murmured to Phasma, who was standing in front of him.
"What was that you said earlier about First Order armor and Wookiees?"
The captain did not reply. The shield control room was not large. With everything functioning normally, there was no need for technicians to be on duty. The instruments monitored themselves. If a problem arose that they could not self-correct, appropriate notification would instantly be flashed to central command. If the difficulty could not be fixed from there, a tech or two would be dispatched to deal with the trouble in person. A planetary shield being a fairly straightforward thing, there was hardly ever a problem with the system. One such problem was about to be artificially induced. Taking a seat before the main console, Phasma paused. What was happening right now made no sense. Still, with her chest and shoulders throbbing from the Wookiee's attention, she was not about to offer what would amount to pointless resistance. The fools presently holding their weapons on her would meet their inevitable fate soon enough. She felt something hard push against the side of her helmet. "Do it!" Finn ordered her. Chewbacca added a few choice moans and grunts for emphasis. Reluctantly, she worked the controls. Accompanied by an appropriate succession of sounds, a sequence of telltales came to life. A readout flared, bright enough for everyone to see it clearly. Shields disable initiated. Leaning toward Han, Finn murmured worriedly.
"Solo, if this works, and if I remember correctly what they told us about the shield system, we don't have a lot of time to find Rey."
"Don't worry, kid,"
Han replied without shifting the muzzle of his weapon a millimeter away from Phasma.
"We won't leave here without her."
The stormtrooper captain sat back.
"I can't do this by myself. It requires 2 security codes to access the full system and shut it down."
"I've been in the business of dealing with liars and thieves my whole life. I know when someone's telling the truth. And when they're not."
Pressing the end of his blaster against one side of Phasma's helmet, Han lowered his voice.
"How well can you hear with one ear?"
More telltales came to life. When she was finished, a second message appeared before them. Shields disabled.
"You can't be so stupid as to think this will be easy,"
Phasma said.
"My troops will storm this block and kill you all. Whatever you're planning, it won't work."
"I disagree," Finn replied without hesitation. "I was told escape from the core was impossible, yet here I am. I was told that training prevented anyone from turning against the Order. Yet here I am. I was told that I was going to die on Jakku. Yet here I am. And here you are."
He glanced over at Han.
"What do we do with her?"
Han pondered a moment.
"Is there a garbage chute? Trash compactor? I have a pretty good idea how they work."
When Finn threw him a quizzical look, Han shrugged.
"Let's just say I've had hands-on experience."
Finn nodded.
"Yeah, there is."
The warning alert that appeared on the console in the central command control room was new to the monitoring technician. Though to the best of his knowledge, it had never come to life previously, he knew perfectly well what it signified. After a quick check to make certain it was neither a system fault nor a test, he felt confident in announcing its activation to those officers who were present.
"Main planetary shields have gone out.
Not localized. Right across the board."
The officer who happened to be conversing with Hux narrowed his gaze.
"General, did you authorize this? I certainly didn't, nor did any of my subordinates."
Hux turned to regard the alert.
"No,
I most certainly did not."
He barked at the technician.
"Cause? Possibly external?"
"It doesn't show here, sir,"
the tech replied. Hux frowned.
"Send a tech squad over to shield control. Could be something as simple as a bad relay.
Or, sir?"
the officer inquired.
The general didn't respond.
In another command and control center,
On another planet, in another system, there was a spontaneous outburst of excitement, followed by a hurried response. "General!" the head tech cried out. "Their shields are down!"
"Oh, my!"
3PO leaned toward the relevant console.
"So they are!"
"You were right,"
Leia said to Statura.
"Send them in."
"Give Poe full authorization to attack,"
Akbar informed a junior officer stationed at another console.
"All available ships, no hesitation. He knows he's not likely to get a second opportunity."
"Black Leader," the officer declared to the pickup that would send out the command via the identical set of relays, "go to sublight. Attack! Attack! On your call!" It was the order Poe had been waiting for. While unsure it would come, he had nevertheless run over the strike schematics in his head a dozen times. Timing was critical. Having plotted the vector to the planet that was home to the Order's Starkiller base as an arc, both to deceive any long-range sensors, as well as to delay arrival and emergence from lightspeed, now they could revise the route and head straight for the target. "Roger, base!" Hitting the controls necessary to alter course within a light-speed run, Poe addressed the rest of his flight. "Red Squad, Blue Squad, follow my lead." At his touch, the revised vector entered the flight computer of every ship in every squadron, and the X-Wings promptly adjusted as a single unit.
"Copy, Black Leader,"
Wexley replied, as his own craft changed direction. Within Central Command on Starkiller Base, there was rising concern. Hux refused to pace, regarding it as a waste of energy.
"The tech squad," he muttered. "Haven't they arrived at shield control yet?"
"Just getting there, sir,"
replied the officer who was monitoring the situation. He went quiet, listening, and a strange expression came over his face. He looked back at Hux.
"Sir, the lead technician reports that the doorway has been sealed."
Hux grimaced.
"Sealed?
Sealed how? By whom?" "He doesn't know, sir."
The officer listened.
"Heat sealed all the way around the edge. Possibly by a blaster. Should they get a cutter?"
Hux shook his head.
"Tell them to blow the door."
"Sir?"
The officer's reply indicated he was unsure he had heard the order correctly.
"Blow the damn door!" Hux shouted. "Tell them to get in there!"
"Yes, sir."
The command was relayed. Moments later, a reply was forthcoming from the tech repair team. The officer swallowed, hesitating.
"What?"
Hux snarled.
"Sir, the team leader reports that there is some damage to the shield control system." "How much damage?"
An increasingly irate Hux demanded. A longer pause this time, following which the officer experienced a sudden intense wish to be anywhere other than where he currently happened to be.
"Destroyed, General. The tech team leader reports that the operational capacity of the entire center has been reduced at least 90% by blaster fire."
Hux had not achieved his present rank and position by deferring problematic situations to group consultation.
"Bypass the shield center. Where redundancy doesn't already exist, port all controls here."
"Yes, sir."
The officer's fingers flew over the console.
"It will take a moment, sir."
Hux all but scraped skin from the palms of his hands while waiting.
"Shields?"
"Not yet,"
the officer told him, still working.
"Why not?" "Have to block any remaining possible directives from the shield center so that they can't override our efforts here, sir."
"Hurry! In the name of the Order, hurry!"
"Yes, sir. I should have it soon, sir."
Hux knew there was nothing more he could do. Further haranguing would only rattle the officer and the other techs in the command center. He could barely stand the silence as they worked, because he feared it was deceptive. set down on the snowy surface. Two TIE fighters and a troop transport flanked the battered, half-buried disc of the Millennium Falcon. That the ship's landing had been less than precise was plainly